Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. The information we present is taken from the writings of Benjamin Krem, a disciple of a Master of Wisdom, and also from teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. We include teachings from many schools of thought to demonstrate how they are working out in the world. Our articles are often inspiring. We hope to inform the public of actions taken around the globe to improve conditions for us all and to find means of addressing some of our most pressing problems.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our program. Today we would like to start with an article by the Master that was given through Benjamin Krem. It was published in the October issue of Share International magazine. Before we read that article, just a reminder that from the inception of Share International magazine, Benjamin Krem's Master provided articles to be published not only at the time they were written, but also whenever appropriate according to world circumstances. Indeed, many of these articles seem more relevant now than when they were first published. This particular article, first printed in April 2005, addresses an ancient but unfortunately ongoing problem which will only be tackled and solved once the redistribution of the world's resources is an established fact, central to international, national and local structures. So it is titled The End of Corruption. More and more, the nations are beginning to recognise, to take seriously and to deal with an age-old problem, namely corruption. In some parts of the world, corruption has been a way of life for centuries. This has benefited the few, of course, at the expense of the many. For untold ages, corrupt leaders and powerful politicians have waxed rich on the taxes imposed on their subjects and citizens. In modern times, the large corporations of the West have been found guilty of cooking the books on a massive scale, while in the East, it is taken for granted that every transaction needs the greasing of someone's palm.
Corruption is endemic and runs through some societies, from the president or prime minister to the police and sport. Electoral corruption is rampant, as recent elections have demonstrated, even in countries supposedly dedicated to freedom and democracy. Such corrupt governments fail and betray their peoples, and so surrender their right to govern. In the midst of such corruption, is it possible to engender trust, without which the future of man would be bleak indeed? Without trust, a fairer sharing of resources would be a forlorn hope. Without trust, the global decisions required to sustain our planetary home would never be taken. Without blessed and beneficent trust, men would forfeit their right to stewardship of planet Earth and would seal themselves off for eons from further evolution. Thus would it be, and thus should men tackle seriously and without delay the corrosive impact of corruption on every strata of society and every nook and cranny of our planetary life.
To help men to do this, you may be sure that Maitreya will be at pains to demonstrate to men the eroding effect of corruption in all its many manifestations. He will show that if men would become the gods they essentially are, they must abandon the old ways of deceit and subterfuge. To tackle the serious environmental problems, he will explain, men must work together in trust. Without trust, Maitreya will emphasise, little can be done. So steeped in corruption themselves are the leaders of the nations that they trust no one. My trust, that men have but one choice to create trust, to share the produce of this bounteous earth more evenly across the world, and so end forever the starvation and poverty of millions dying in the midst of plenty. Will the leaders listen to the words of Maitreya? For the most part, possibly no, not at first. But soon the people everywhere will hear and will see the wisdom of Maitreya's advice. They will say amen to his wise words and support his cause. World public opinion will find its voice and its mentor. And against its power, the obstructive voices of the greedy dictators and corrupt politicians will fade. So will it be, and so will begin the cleansing and transformation of this world.
We have another piece by Graham Peoples. It's called Education and the Mental Health Epidemic. Across the Western world, June is exam time. In Britain, written tests taken in halls of silence and tension have triggered a mini epidemic of anxiety-rooted conditions. Pupils have reported mental exhaustion, panic attacks, crying, nosebleeds, sleepless nights, hair loss, and outbreaks of acne. Over the past 25 years, depression and anxiety amongst teenagers in the UK has increased by 70%. This pattern is repeated across the developed world and is the result of a cocktail of pressures. Pressures that result in 10% of under 18-year-olds in America being dependent on mental health medication. In parts of Asia, things are just as bad or worse. The pressure to achieve high marks in exams in Hong Kong is driving some students to suicide. 71 students took their lives between 2013 and 2016, reports the South China Morning Post.
In Singapore, which produces children who excel in standardized tests, an 11-year-old jumped to his death from the 17th floor of an apartment building in 2016 because he was afraid to tell his parents his exam results. The inquest heard that the boy's parents relentlessly pushed him to achieve at school. His mother would cane him for every mark he received under 70%. In 2015, a record 27 suicides were reported among children between 10 and 19, which was double the previous year's total. Suicide or attempted suicide is a raw scream revealing the internal agony a child is living with, pain that he or she feels suffocated by and unable to openly acknowledge. In most cases, children don't kill themselves, they just become ill, some chronically. The World Health Educational, WHO for short, states that neuropsychiatric conditions are the primary cause of disability in under 25-year-olds worldwide, and says that globally between 10 and 20% of children and adolescents experience mental disorders, feeding what are often long-term conditions. Research shows that 75% of all mental health issues begin before a person reaches 18, with 50% taking root before age 15.
There are various interconnected reasons for this mental health epidemic. The burden to conform and the relentless pressure to succeed are primary causes and are present throughout institutionalized education. For many young people, education has become a byword for competition and anxiety. School or university, a place where uniformity is demanded and individuality denied. A hostile place in which pressure and stress dominate. Despite the best efforts of teachers, many of whom are doing wonderful work, The goal of academic institutions in many countries has been reduced to passing exams and achieving high grades. This is anathema to what education ought to be. At the heart of education should be the aim of creating happy human beings free from fear. This requires establishing environments that allow an individual to discover innate talents, to explore him, herself, and slowly, perhaps clumsily, give expression to that. A stimulating, nurturing space where mistakes can be made, failure allowed, independent thinking fostered, and responsibility for society and the natural environment engendered.
Like all aspects of contemporary life, education has been tainted by the values of a particular approach to life and a materialistic methodology that fosters negative tendencies instead of feeding the good and liberating the spirit. Competition is encouraged instead of cooperation, placing people in opposition to one another, cultivating division instead of unity. Individual success is championed at the expense of group well-being, and life is reduced to a battleground ruled by desire and the pursuit of pleasure. The focus within this paradigm of misery is on material success and the accumulation of status and things. Hedonism is sold as the source of all happiness, feeding perpetual discontent. It is an extremely narrow approach to life that denies mystery and wonder, pours cynicism on the miraculous, and attempts to crush self-investigation and silence opposition. While the majority of humanity suffer and struggle to live healthy, fulfilling lives within this mode of living, there are those who, economically at least, profit handsomely. As a result, and failing to recognize that they too are trapped, they do everything to maintain it. They are the wealthy and powerful, the ruling elite. Money begets power and political influence under the prevailing paradigm. Such influence is used to shape and draft government policies that strengthen systems which maintain the existing unhealthy order.
To uphold the status quo, freedom of thought and true individuality are curtailed, social conformity insisted upon. The major tools of conditioning are the media, which is commonly owned by corporations or controlled by governments, organized religion, and education. The policies of schools and colleges are set by central government, and consistent with the pervasive ideology, politicians ensure that conformity and competition are built into the working methodology. Students are set in competition with one another, with established standards, and with themselves, and are regularly forced to sit written exams to evaluate how much they can remember or know about any particular subject. Taking exams dictates the passage of a child's education and establishes the benchmark against which young people are judged and, by extension, judge themselves. Using tests as a way of assessing a person's ability and knowledge is archaic. Sitting exams exert colossal pressure, and although some may be able to cope and do well, the majority feel suffocated. In Britain, the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children relates that in 2016-2017, Childline delivered 3,135 counseling sessions on exam stress, a rise of 11% over the past 2 years. Children aged between 12 and 18 reports that exam stress was causing depression and anxiety, panic attacks, low self-esteem, self-harming and suicidal thoughts.
This pattern is common in many developed and developing countries where ideologically driven corporate governments obsessed with trade continue to pursue methods that are, by design, detrimental to the well-being of children. Instead of policies rooted in competition, cooperation and sharing needs to be encouraged in all aspects of education and standardized exams consigned to the past. The educational environment needs to be one in which children are encouraged to support each other, to share their own particular gifts with the group and build a sense of social responsibility. Many teachers naturally employ such inclusive methods, but working within divisive systems which promote individual success, conformity and competition, their efforts are often frustrated. A more enlightened approach to education is found in Finland. Here, children don't start school until they are seven. There is no streaming or selection in schools, so children of varying abilities work side by side. No homework is set. School holidays are long and there's only one standardized test administered in the final year of high school. The result is happier children than in countries where testing, homework, selection and competition reign supreme. Not only are children happier, according to the World Happiness Report, Finland is the happiest country in the world, they achieve higher academic marks than students in many other countries. And this is according to the Programme for International Student Assessment, organised annually by the OECD. Finland ranks fourth for reading and fifth for maths in the world. 93% of students graduate from high school, compared to 78% in Canada and 75% in America. Teachers in Finland are well qualified, all have a master's degree, and are highly valued. They are not dictated to by misguided politicians who come and go, but are trusted to do their job independently. And the country has a long-term approach to education policy, which means plans remain in place for a significant amount of time, giving them a chance to work, as according to Russell Hobby, who is the leader of the UK National Association of Head Teachers.
System is part of a society's overall approach to living. As well as being a happy place to live and having a relaxed attitude to education, Finland has some of the lowest levels of wealth and income inequality in the world and the highest level of community trust. In contrast, Britain, USA, Singapore and Hong Kong have some of the highest levels of inequality. The Finland education system is inseparable from the culture which it serves.
That's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for listening. If you would like more information, visit the website share-international.org or you could email us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Love and blessings to you all. Thank you.